reports, the paper on business transformation.
Thank you. This audit reviewed the controls over the transformation programme and focused in detail on a sample of three supporting projects. The report details the importance of the programme to the Council in transforming services and helping to deliver savings to bridge the funding gaps over the next few years. The report notes as examples of transformation projects which have had a positive impact on the service, and these include housing, children's services, and adult and community care. There has, however, been challenge in delivering the savings targeted from the start of the programme, with a current variance of £1.3 million to budget. As there is a projected shortfall of £11 million by 16-17, and the transformation programme is an important element in reducing this as part of the financial strategy, it is important that these savings are actually achieved going forward. We identified a number of issues around the programme governance, including reporting and risk management, and we have made a number of recommendations on these and in relation to the individual projects reviewed. We therefore rated the strengths of the internal control as amber, which is a limited level of assurance. During the course of the audit, we were pleased to note that management had acted on a number of the recommendations raised, 18 in fact, and these recommendations are therefore already recorded as closed within the report. The audit committee is invited to review the contents of the report and endorse the agreed recommendations. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Graham. There's been quite a lot of tightening up of the rigour of the process of the transformation programme. Have we any further comments? Councillor Thompson.
Yeah, I think obviously the critical point around anything in transformation is that the targets are achieved. I think that the report points out there's a number of issues that can be tightened up and improved, but ultimately, so long as we actually achieve the targets we're setting, that is the ultimate aim of transformation, and it is going to be a process that's going to have to continue. Certainly in the last period there has been significant move towards ensuring very specific targets are attached to individual work streams and that these targets are deliverable. So from that point of view moving forward, I would be confident that, and I think we can see that from the number of actions that have already been completed and the actual plan is outlined, I would have confidence in the work streams delivering as it have been agreed by the group.
Are the savings we've registered all appropriately part of the transformation programme, or are they things that would have happened anyhow? As the baseline for our savings changed?
Well, in the gathering silence, shall I have a go at that one, Chair? I think that the transformation programme started with a report that I wrote to the Council as a relatively new Chief Executive in 2010. And what that report did was not simply set out the scale of the financial challenge, which even at that stage we knew to be considerable, though it's been significantly exacerbated since then, but also the need for transformation to drive cultural change, to improve service provision. And certainly if you look at particularly perhaps some of the successes which are identified in the report, and I suppose children's services is a recent example, the embedding, if I can use that word, of transformation resources into children's services, I think has been fundamental in terms of being able to drive that that change programme. So I don't think it's possible to say exactly what would have occurred without the transformation programme. I suppose what the report says to me is that underlines the importance of transformation in terms of meeting our financial and service challenges. I think it makes some very strong points about the need for good governance and that needed to be improved. And of course, the structural change we made earlier this year, putting transformation into finance and integrated service support was, I think, in large part designed to help achieve some of these shortcomings. So the report does show that we need to do better, but it also underlines the importance of transformation in terms of getting as far as we have got.
Can I ask about the enhanced early retirement programme? There seems to be quite a lot of interest in this, if I may put it that way. It will have consequential impacts on the pension fund. Are there any adverse consequences to the council of having several hundred employees take early retirement under this new scheme?
I'm not sure what you mean by adverse consequences, but in terms of the financial strategy report and the monitoring reports, we report the impact of the severance packages on the council's finances, both in terms of the savings they have on the revenue account and the impact they have on reserves in terms of the one-off costs through severance payments and strain on pension fund costs. So it's full transparency in terms of the reporting of the numbers. And the scheme has requires a business case for each application, which highlights which reinforces the positive impact it has on the overall impact of council finances in terms of there has to be a relatively short payback in terms of the upfront costs and the savings that will then accrue.
So the bottom line is that Audit Scotland, for example, would not find the situation on early retirement here something that they would adversely comment upon, that we are getting the commercial benefits from early retirement and the costs are reasonable.
I suppose I wouldn't want to answer a hypothetical question of what Audit Scotland would or would not do, but there's nothing that I've seen that would suggest that we're far away from what other councils are doing in terms of schemes or that it is unreasonable. And again, I would reinforce that each case has a business case which shows that there is a long-term payback for the money we're spending to release staff. The overall impact of the scheme that was reported to council in September, there is a premium that has been paid for to enhance the scheme, which has allowed us to drive the costs out of the business, and that's a small part compared with what would have been incurred if we'd had simply allowed people to leave the organisation on statutory terms.
Thank you. There being no further comments, let's move on to the next item. Council tax liability and billing. Can we talk about progress in this area?
Thank you. This audit report reviewed the key controls operating over the establishment of council tax liability and the dispatch of bills. Arrears recovery was excluded from the audit scope, as this will be included in an audit of arrears, which is on this year's plan. The audit identified a number of effective controls, but also some areas for improvement, including the statutory performance indicator for the collection of council tax, which revealed that Midlothian was positioned towards the bottom of the league table. We were 28th out of the 32 authorities for 2012-13. There were no detailed local procedures on how to calculate the SPI, and as a result of this, management were unable to clarify a number of queries raised by internal audit over its calculation. And there was a large backlog of cases which may have had an impact on the collection performance. There is no contract in place with the company who prints Midlothian's council tax bills, and this service was not competitively tendered. Quality checking of cases was not always undertaken to the level prescribed, which could result in errors being undetected and systemic problems not being identified. And there was a lack of audit trail in the annual billing file detailing how errors were corrected or which reports had been reconciled. We therefore rated the strength of internal control as yellow, which is a moderate level of assurance. We're pleased to report that 13 of the 23 recommendations made by internal audit have already been completed. The audit committee is invited to review the contents of the audit report and endorse the agreed audit recommendations.
Okay, obviously the council has been congratulated on taking the numbers down from 1,425 to 483, but that is because we've hired more staff.
Chair. That's in respect of vacancies which were being carried in revenues have since been filled. We've also launched our trainee programme again this year with four trainees being recruited in the last 2 months so that we can have a progressive career path in respect of those revenue staff. We've had difficulty with that over the past 3 years with the consequence of welfare reform, where there was the intention that the council tax reduction scheme was abolished, and the prospect of revenue staff being two-peed into DWP didn't give the opportunity for us to recruit, and we have been working with existing staff on an overtime basis until this current year. Those staff, as I say, have now been recruited, and our position has substantially improved, both in terms of in-year collection and the variance on the previous year of council tax collected from 2013 through to 2014, where we were at minus 4% on where we were to plus 4% at this time in September of 14. And if I'm indulged, I will copy these into to members so they can see that progressive improvement. We also have improved in-year collection, as I say, and the potential from April of this year with DWP permitting direct deduction of water rates because we collect on behalf of Scottish Water, which was also improving our in-year collection rate.
It's a bit of a fastball question, but does that mean that we might be out of the bottom quartile when we next come to review this issue?
I would anticipate that's the case. The comparison is not yet available for us to see across 13-14, but with those actions, certainly I would anticipate that we're in a much better quartile position, yes.
Elaine, thank you very much. That's very informative. Councillor Thompson.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's when we look at the comparative position, it's probably worth noting that there's probably between councils at the very bottom and the council at the top performing, there's only probably about a 2% difference there. So actually sort of small movements can quickly change position in regards to our comparative authority.
Which is why this is such a good win for us. And also I think there's some definitional issues where we may be on the conservative side, therefore marking ourselves down unnaturally compared to other councils. Item 6, Information Technology Control Environment. Grant Thornton, Gary. Councillor Thompson.
I think just to say, given it's been a particularly challenging year for IT in trying to adapt to the new PSN regulations, I think to have a report that's as positive of this coming off the back of all the changes that have had to be made is encouraging.
Yes, I was pleased. It's good housekeeping, and the remedies you suggest all sound very sensible, straightforward, and not non-controversial. Councillor Muirhead.
I mean, I agree it's a good report, but the only thing that stuck out with me was this issue of the proximity of the server to the backup server is an issue that we've had here for ages. In fact, I think we've had it since Green Hall shut, because I think we had some of the facilities for backing up our systems at a location up in Gore Bridge, which was fine. But every time I read anything about this, nothing seems to be moving forward. I realise it's, as I say, it's no absolutely critical, but it is an issue that's been around for an awful long time.
Yes, we have raised that. Gary, do you want to talk to that?
Yeah, I think the agreed action plan set out in the report summarises what we plan to do. We recognise it's a risk, and we feel it's a risk we have to carry at present. And as we move forward with eWIM, and in particular Nubata, we'll look at the business case for the relocation of one of the server rooms. But there isn't an overnight solution, so to speak, and it'll take us time to get there. So yeah, you may well see this again next year, but I would hope that in the medium term we will see that as part of our asset managed strategy, being able to address that risk once and for all.
Again, that we've heard that before. Did we consider Las Weed, for instance, as a potential location for this kind of thing? I'm just trying to figure out what's going to change next year when New Battle comes along. If we've locating it in there as opposed to Las Weed.
My recollection of this is certainly came on my radar after we were already committed to Las Weed. So I don't know what decisions were taken as part of the Las Weed build to look at this. But now, since it's been raised in the last couple of reports, certainly looking at the options as we make significant investment, and the next big investment being New Battle, obviously.
It maybe just seems longer than it actually is. As I say, it's been.
Yeah, as I recall, I mean, Las Weed, it was too far advanced at the planning stage to incorporate the servers there, but presumably New Battle is not, and we will be in time to have the servers relocated. A rhetorical question for you, Gary.
My only caveat would be it's subject to consideration of a costed business case. So we'll assess the financial implications and the risk and take an informed decision.
Councillor Bryant.
Just a little caveat on Councillor Muirhead, what he said. On page 49, Gary, proposed action, we recommend that the Council test the recovery of the open revenues and Integra systems, at least on an annual basis. Is that happening?
Yeah, we've taken those recommendations on board, and will happen. As Councillor Thompson highlighted, that a lot of our activity this year has been on PSN, and we've still got work to do on that in terms of the next steps. But yeah, we'll take these recommendations on board and test resilience.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. Proximity of the servers is a risk to keeping the systems up and running. It also refers here to saying the backup tapes, so this is the data, quite separate from that, are kept in a safe in the ground floor of Fairfield House, whilst the servers are in Fairfield House and Midlothian House. I hope that we have other backup tapes which are off-site, for the simple reason if we had a major disaster like an explosion which destroyed both buildings. We don't want to not only destroy the servers, but to lose all our data as well. I think in this day and age, people tend, rather than having backup tapes that are sent all over the place, I know when I worked at the Royal Bank, that's what they did years ago. Nowadays, it tends to be that you store data in what's termed loosely as the cloud, which is basically servers owned by somebody else with security implications, obviously, in that, but secure data, which they then back up in several different places, and you then don't have to worry about it, because it's 100% guaranteed you will get that data back if something happens to their systems.
Gary, do you want to comment on that? Or either Gary?
We are taking I suppose it's back to what's set out in the action plan, that we'll look to move both into a more remote location from the main server room. I'm not in a position really to comment on the use of cloud technology as a means to do that in terms of the technical aspects of that. Clearly we operate in that PSN environment where data security and the firewalls and the constraints that we have in place sometimes limit our what you would maybe use in terms of the technologies available. But I'm happy if Councillor Baxter would want to catch up maybe offline in terms of the where we are with that, and speak to Ian Ragg and Phil Timoney, the Digital Services Manager.
There are probably two issues to Councillor Baxter's question. One is the risk to losing data for from an event which causes the backup tapes to be destroyed or not usable. The other one is, even if you do that, you have to make sure that the backup data actually works, so that data which is stored in there, when you lose your data, it actually works and you can access that data. So you need to test that to make sure that those backup tapes work, even if it's from the cloud or a tape or whatever source. And that's normally a kind of a program that lots of organisations have just to test their backup and disaster recovery arrangements.
I would have thought that would be something we must be doing. Every organisation does. Are you indicating we might not be doing it?
So we didn't test that. I was simply reacting to Councillor Baxter's question and saying there are two elements to that, really, in relation to the potential loss of data.
So leg one of the question is, should we be putting the tapes in another location, which seems a very sensible idea, but there might be some data protection reason why you can't. And secondly, are we testing our backup tapes to make sure that they're usable?
Again, the action plan highlights that the business continuity test plans are there, and we take the recommendation that they will prioritise the testing of those and make it more, increase our resilience by doing that.
Councillor Bright.
Just a suggestion, Gary. The third biggest computer in the world is at the Bush. You could maybe ask Edinburgh University to use their computer as a backup.
I didn't know that, so thanks for sharing that. And I don't know what the implications are for that, but I'll certainly feed it back to Phil Timoney in terms of the debate we've had on this issue and the options that have been highlighted in committee.
Councillor Baxter.
Yeah, I think that any sort of disaster recovery should perhaps be done in conjunction with other local authorities, because they will probably have similar kinds of systems and similar kit. I go back to my own time at the Royal Bank. Their backup systems with the Bank of Scotland, a fierce rival, but they had very similar kit, IBM mainframes, and so they knew that they would be able to run on those systems. But it does worry me that perhaps now we're saying that we don't test our backup data. That is something which you need to do, because you need to have 100% confidence that you're going to get your systems back up and running in the event of any serious failure.
No, sorry, I wasn't saying that we don't test it. I'm saying we can test it better and be more regular with our testing. And it's Gary's point, and it's making sure you test it and you know that you have confidence that if you need to switch it on, if that disaster does happen, that it will perform what you need it to do. And we can do better at that.
Let's move on. Thank you for that. Item number 7, the Audit Committee reporting calendar. When I first arrived here, I never quite knew what was going to come at each meeting, and it was full of surprises, but I think, Graham, you've been working on making our activity levels more predictable and more regular, and this is what the reporting calendar is about.
Yeah, I'm going to do this one. This report provides a schedule of when certain reports are expected to be submitted to the Audit Committee. Additional reports will be submitted as and when work is completed and are not specifically programmed in the attached document. So the Audit Committee is invited to endorse the Audit Committee reporting calendar.
The inevitable question is there anything we can do to avoid some of the clustering in certain meetings so as to regulate our workflow even more than you've already done?
Unfortunately, June is a very heavy month, but that's because it's the end of our year and there's certain reports we have to report back on at that specific time. But throughout the rest of the year, we do try to spread them out as much as we can. And as I say, there will be other reports coming in addition to these ones, so we do try to make sure that we don't submit them all to the same meeting where possible.
In deriving the taxonomy of activity, did you relate to our risk register?
We use the risk register to actually compile our audit plan, so that our plan is risk-based. But we did consult with the risk manager to make sure that certain risk reports are submitted throughout the year as and when required.
Thank you very much. Now, Graham, I think this is definitely you. The Audit report template.
Yes, we've undertaken a review of our internal audit reports and have made a number of suggested changes to the templates that we use. This is in part due to the public sector internal audit standards, but we've also benchmarked against another of other councils and other public bodies. The main changes are we've moved away from a scoring system using colours because there are five possible colour ratings, and we didn't think that that system lended itself to that approach. We've updated the wording on the ratings to make our opinion clearer. We've defined high, medium and low risk ratings given to each issue, and we've taken out a lot of the detail at the start of the report and pushed that out to an appendix. And we've also included the terms of reference at the end of the report. So we intend to use this new report format as from December, but we wanted to present this to the audit committee to see if there were any suggested changes to our template and if they agree for us to use that template going forward. Thank you.
It certainly addresses a problem we had early on that the three-coloured traffic lights can be very crude in terms of analysing the level of difficulty we have. Have we any comments on this? I presume this is known to the external auditor and you're happy for us to proceed in this manner.
I think it's a really good template, Chair. So,
thank you. On that note, let's move on to the next item. Thank you. Public sector internal audit standards.
Yes, thank you. Basically, the internal audit charter was reported to and approved by the audit committee at its meeting on the 18th of June 2013. The public sector internal audit standards require that the charter be regularly reviewed and that any changes are reported to the audit committee. There have been two changes since the charter was approved in June, and these relate to the fact that internal audit now reports to the chief executive, and that Midlothian Council was going to take part in the Scottish Local Authority Scheme for External Inspections of the Internal Audit Service. And that approach was approved by the Audit Committee in March 2014. So the Audit Committee is requested to note these updates to the Audit Charter. Thank you.
So be it. Thank you very much. The Scottish Local Authority's Chief Internal Auditors Group, pages 91 to 97.
Thanks, Stuart. This report provides an update on the activities of the Scottish Local Authority's Chief Internal Audit Group during the period 2013-14, which Midlothian is a member of. The group aims to be the voice of internal audit across Scottish local authorities and is a driving force for internal audit best practice. Each year, the chair of the group produces a report on its activities and key achievements and requests that the report is provided to local audit committees for their interest. So the audit committee is invited to note Midlothian Council's involvement and participation in the group and the annual report by the chair as detailed on pages 95 to 97. Thank you.
Are you getting value out of your participation in these exotic places you have to go to?
Yeah, they are very useful. And we actually, in addition to the meetings, we have a system where a lot of local authorities, we can email each other and ask for opinions. What do you do for this? What do you do for that? What do you have in place? And we do a lot of sharing of information and best practice. So it is a very good group.
Noted. Thank you very much. The number of papers from Audit Scotland where we have useful praises provided by our officers here. First, the number item 11, Audit Scotland report, charging for services. Who would like to talk to this? They're largely for noting, and there are full reports available here if anyone wants to look in greater detail.
Chair, I think Mr. Blair was going to speak to this item, and he is just coming back in.
John, charging for services, are you getting it right, the Audit Scotland input?
Yes, apologise, the comfort break took longer than envisaged. This is the first national report we've brought to Audit Committee. The Are You Getting It Right report was published in October 2013, which was one of the National Accounts Commission reports. in response to fees and charges, the council had a history of work looking at fees and charges. We established a cross-party working group which met on numerous occasions up to the summer, and that culminated in a report to council in June 2014. As part of the working group, we used the Audit Commission report to inform the debate. The background is set on pages 100 to 101, and today Audit Committee is invited to consider the recommendations.
My general approach is that provided the officers have digested these papers and our activities are in line with them, there's very little for us to add. But if there is an area where legitimately Midlothian decides not to follow the suggestions coming from Audit Scotland, we'd like to know what the justification would be for that.
I would endorse that approach. I think the timing of the Audit Scotland report was ideal in terms of our own internal reviews, and we used that to influence the report to Council.
Councillor Thomson.
I think the approach in this one was particularly useful because we took the Audit Scotland report and used it as a basis for ensuring that the process we applied to our own fees and charges review was consistent and that we were applying the best practices outlined in the report. So I think that was it's a useful way to adapt some of these reports to our own internal processes.
Agreed. Item 12, options appraisal.
I suppose I would really just endorse what's been said in the previous report in terms of the approach we take to these and using them to learn from them and improve what we currently do. I think one of the things I would draw out from the option appraisal report is the key role that councillors have in the whole issue of option appraisal. And I think members around the table will recognise that. And if we think about New Battle and the option appraisal and the role members played in that in terms of the way forward and have continued to play in terms of the appraisal of key investment decisions. We will take away the second part, the process and the mechanics we have within the team to actually make sure that we learn and we adopt best practice.
Amen to that. Kenneth, the overview report on local government in Scotland.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I mean, this is a report that's produced annually, the overview of local government in Scotland. I think that it is actually an exceptionally helpful document and one which is worthwhile officers and indeed members as well reading. What we've endeavoured to do here is summarise the key recommendations and also say something about Midlothian's position in regard to each of these recommendations. So, for example, if we take the first key priority, this is on page 118 of the agenda, understanding the changing context and the crucial role of councillors. It talks about maintaining a clear understanding of the financial position, understanding the public reform agenda, including the impact of welfare reform, and also preparing for changes in health and social care. Now, I hope that as a council, and in terms of the reporting brought forward by officers, in terms of the work that members get involved in, and I think in terms of certainly welfare reform, members have been involved in quite an active and positive group in relation to that, that it illustrates that we are considering the right issues and bringing appropriate reports forward to members. I mean, notably, the fourth recommendation under that first heading is about keeping up to date through training and development. And we do have a regular schedule of training events for members. I have to say they're not always well attended, though many of the members in the room today are frequent and good attenders at these meetings. But it is important that on the back of a national report like this, that members, if they feel that officers do need to do more in terms of bringing forward reports or setting up groups in relation to specific issues, that is done. So I would encourage members to look and consider the issues raised in this report within that context.
Do Midlothian have much input into the creation of these reports in any sense of shape or form, perhaps rather indirectly? Perhaps from a Grant Thornton point of view, you're more aware of the two-way nature of the traffic.
These reports are created, certainly the overview report from the annual report to members, which are issued to every council by external audit. So that will be coming to the council's December meeting, the report from us that you get every year. That's the basis for the report, the overview report outcomes. I attended a small group meeting with Audit Scotland looking at how they could develop this report going forward to make it more usable perhaps for the sector. Part of to think about what this is used for, part of it is used by the Local Authority Committee in Parliament around looking at some of the issues that are emerging in local government. And Audit Scotland use it for that purpose, but they also use it to drive councils and auditors and regulators in terms of how they might include these issues in their audit and inspection programmes, and as Kenneth said, how it might be useful for councils in just making sure they're doing the right things.
So the impact of reduced central government support for local government agencies is well known through this conduit and presumably others.
It's well known. it's what you do about that, which is an issue that auditors, for example, in Audit Scotland can't influence. So that's a matter for others. So in context, it's as useful as it is. It is what it is. It's an auditor's view of the world. What you do about that, I think, is in the hands of councils and politicians elsewhere.
Thank you much. Item 14, the financial strategy report. I believe this has been seen by the Council already, but it was determined as a result of our forward-looking role in the Audit Committee that this should also be considered in this place. Gary, could you possibly give us a heads-up on it?
You're right in what you say, Chair, and again, that message reinforced in the business transformation audit recommendations that you saw earlier on the agenda, that this report should come before committee for more scrutiny. So what we have today is the report that went to Council in September, which sets out the latest update on our financial strategy for the next three financial years. It did for the first time include projections for year 17-18, so that was the first time that Council had seen the projections for that year. You will see a consistency in these reports since they've started in February, where I will try and keep the same key themes coming through. So we give an update on the overall position. The Scottish Government grant, our single biggest income source, and we've now, since that report was published, had the Scottish Government spending plans on the 9th of October, and I'll be reporting my view of those up to Council on next Tuesday. But broadly speaking, there were no surprises in the announcement. We have a council tax freeze at the moment, which will continue as part of those spending plans. Section 5 of the report sets out where we think service costs will go, and we see inflationary pressures coming through in terms of pay, contractual inflation, borrowing costs associated with investment, and other service developments. We face significant demographic cost pressures through the elderly care, and also in terms of our increasing pupil numbers. Those take us to a position where by 17-18 we're projecting cost of services to be in the region of £208 million, but our income to be nearly £17 million less than that. So our budgets are still growing, it's just our income isn't keeping pace with the growth in those budgets. The tables in tables 1, 2 and 3 of the report give a breakdown of the reason for the movements and the cost drivers. We then move in terms of section 6 to the strategy to address that challenge, and key to that is the transformation programme we talked about earlier, which is set in section 6.2, our workforce strategy we touched on, VSER, and the impact that has on our projections, the savings that were secured through management review. And I suppose that all of those strands of the financial strategy take us down to the table 6 and section 6.9, which is we've got the projected shortfalls, we've got all of the strands of work we're doing to address that challenge, but at present we're still £7.5 million adrift in year 3, and the strategic leadership is continuing to work to address that and bring forward options that would look at how we can secure further transformation, recommendations for service reductions, whatever it may be, to address that budget shortfall. The report sets out a timetable, and the timetable agreed by Council is that on the 16th of December we would seek to agree the 15-16 budget and have indicative budgets for the later years. We have a further update in the paper on reserves, and again one of those that will be updated again next week, and other than that the recommendations made to Council back in September were to note the assumptions, note the projections and note the update on delivery. So say there's a further report will come to Council 4th November and then a fuller report back to Council on the 16th of December. So I'm happy to take any detailed questions or on the report, Chair.
So even if our transformation programme goes as we hope it will, and all these changes are implemented that are suggested here, we'd still have a £7.5 million annual deficit by 2017-18.
Yes, at that point in time, yes, that's our projections. There's a number of assumptions in arriving at that, not least of which we only have Scottish Government spending plans for 1 year. I make assumptions on what may happen in the later years, but yeah, all things being equal, that's what we're projecting, and that's what we're working to address as a management team.
Before we debate amongst the councillors, from a Grant Thornton perspective, is our projected deficit here much worse than any other local authority of our size?
No, in fact, some are better than others, and there is a mixed picture out there, but all of them have deficits. The key to this is with the paper that we had earlier in previous Grant Thornton reports. I've said the business transformation programme needs to start delivering for the council. So in previous years it hasn't delivered the savings that were expected of it, and the senior management team in Midlothian have recognised that and taken, I think, really good action to put a really robust framework now around the business transformation programme. But it has to start delivering savings. And the other issue to note about this is if you don't deliver those savings in year one, so if you don't front-load them in some way, then you're into quite difficult territory by year three, where you have to balance your budget, and maybe that gap may widen if the business transformation programme doesn't work effectively. And it's critical, I think, for councillors particularly. They'll be faced with some difficult decisions, I suspect, and that's happening in every council in Scotland. And it's the ability to use options appraisal and other mechanisms to do the best for the council in quite difficult financial circumstances that's going to be critical. And I think that's the part where me as external auditor will be paying really close attention to how the council manages that process and starts to deliver achievable cash savings going forward.
Councillor Dink.
I don't want to embarrass the external auditor, but when he says some are better than others, out of 10, where would you rate Midlothian Council?
So I don't know the picture across the whole of Scotland, but I'll give you so some examples. Something like City of Glasgow would be sitting in something like several hundred million of a gap. City of Edinburgh would be the same. Places like North Lanarkshire, about 60 million. So Stirling Council, which is one of mine, 30 million. Now, Midlothian is not as large as some of these, and the gap is smaller. But nevertheless, I wouldn't underestimate the scale of that challenge. Other councils have the other balance, and that is the amount of reserves that council have in order to act as a buffer for some of these savings. And so different councils are in different positions in relation to how they take this forward.
So, sorry, Councillor
Baxter. Councillor
Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask a question about the council tax freeze.
Now, when this was introduced many years ago, it was on the basis that councils did have the option to raise council tax, but if they did so, they would lose out a good portion of funding, which I think at the time was about £70 million spread across the whole of Scotland. Now, given that the Scottish Council Government grant, according to these figures, is dropping in real terms over the next 2 to 3 years, does this mean that that £70 million per year, which was being given to councils, is now withdrawn? Does it mean that if we voted, as I would like to do, to increase council tax, I feel it's a very regressive form of taxation, if we as councils decided to go for that option, does that mean that we would be further punished, or are there some funds somewhere that we would not receive?
So all we have is on the 9th of October, Scottish Government spending plans for the year 15-16. The published budget and the subsequent correspondence to the Leader of the Council from the Cabinet Secretary highlighted it is a condition of the grant settlement that's on offer that councils will freeze council tax. There is £70 million on the table yet again across Scotland to fund that. If councils decide not to freeze council tax and raise them, then they will lose their proportionate share of that £70 million. The gearing effect that on any council tax increase means you'd have to put it up by a significant sum just to stand still. I am projecting in later years, and councils endorse the projections of potentially for the first time a cash reduction in grant support. But what conditions might be attached to grant support in the later years is anybody's guess. So we're very much we're in the hands of the challenge. You know, Scottish Government faces the same challenge as we do in terms of balancing its budgets and what priorities it can and can't support. We are predicated our budget projections on a continuation of the council tax freeze and the £70 million for it, which means then an overall reduction in the amount of cash support we will get from Scottish Government.
Sorry, just to clarify then, are you saying that our proportion of that £70 million is already taken into account here and assumes that we're going to vote for a council tax freeze? Is that the case?
Yes, that's the basis on which I've prepared the budget projections.
My understanding of this issue is that the residential council tax is roughly 16% of our revenues. Our deficit is showing up as 8%. So even if there was not this set-off problem that you've alluded to, we would have to across the board increase council tax by 50% in order to cure the deficit. No doubt you would want it in a progressive way, in which case some people would be looking at 100% increases. I'm sure that doesn't give you any pleasure.
Chair, just to add that there are significant uncertainties. I think Gary's alluded to this. We only have a year's settlement. If George Osborne's budget comes to pass, the consequentials through to government funding, and particularly through to local government funding, could be higher at this point over the business plan cycle. So at this point, we just don't know. And there's also the issue of where we may end up in devolution, should that go forward, so which tax raising powers may Scotland get, and how may that impact? It's just simply to say that there is significant uncertainty at present around local government finance going forward.
Councillor Thompson.
Yeah, I think it's certainly worth noting that the share local government in Scotland gets of the Scottish Government's block grant has been maintained over the recent years. I mean, you look at the cuts that are having to be made by local authorities south of the border, where it's 20-30% having to be saved annually. as difficult as here, it's certainly not to the levels that are having to be made in some other authorities. And certainly when this report came to Council, we recognised that we've travelled some distance, but there's more to be done, and I've challenged officers to bring forward further additional proposals to look to continue to work towards addressing the remaining 7.5 and beyond that, because recognising that the years following that won't suddenly become land of milk and honey where we've got endless supplies of money again. It has to be a continuing ongoing process.
I think we'll need our transformation team for quite some time. Thank you for that, which I think concludes our discussions. Thank you all for attending and for your contributions.